Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Dvamma hingsakshantir arjavam. Acharyo pasanam shocham sthairyam atma vinigraha indriyartheshu vairagyam anahankara evacha janma mrityu jaravyadhi dukha doshanu darshanam asaktirana bishvanga utradara grihadishu nityang cha sammachittat Tvam ishta nishto papatishu mai chananya yogena bhakti ravya bhicharini vivikta desha sevitvam aratir jana sangsadhi adhyatma jnana nityatvam tatva jnanartha darshanam etaj jnanam iti proktam ajnanam yadatonyatha.
Translation: humility, pridelessness, non-violence, tolerance, simplicity, approaching a bona fide spiritual master, cleanliness, steadiness, self-control, renunciation of the objects of sense gratification, absence of false ego, the perception of the evil of birth, death, old age and disease, detachment, freedom from entanglement with children, wife, home, and the rest, even-mindedness amid pleasant and unpleasant events, constant and unalloyed devotion to me, aspiring to live in a solitary place, detachment from the general mass of people, accepting the importance of self-realization, and philosophical search for the absolute truth. All these, I, Lord Krishna says, declare to be knowledge, and besides this, whatever there may be, is ignorance. A request for cell phones to be turned off, please. Srila Prabhupada's purport. The process of knowledge is sometimes misunderstood by less intelligent men as being the interaction of the field of activity. But actually, this is the real process of knowledge. If one accepts this process, then the possibility of approaching the absolute truth exists. This is not the interaction of the 24 elements, as described before. This is actually the means to get out of the entanglement of those elements. The embodied soul is entrapped by the body, which is a casing made of the 24 elements. And the process of knowledge, as described here, is the means to get out of it. Of all the descriptions of the process of knowledge, the most important point is described in the first line of the 11th verse. Mai chananya yogena bhaktir avyabhicharini. The process of knowledge terminates in unalloyed devotional service to the Lord. So, if one does not approach or is not able to approach the transcendental service of the Lord, then the other 19 items are of no particular value. But if one takes to devotional service in full Krishna consciousness, the other 19 items automatically develop within him. As stated in Srimad Bhagavatam, Yasya asti bhaktir bhagavatya kinchana sarvair gunai tatra samasate suraha. All the good qualities of knowledge develop in one who has attained the stage of devotional service. The principle of accepting a spiritual master, as mentioned in the 8th verse, is essential. Even for one who takes to devotional service, It is most important. Transcendental life begins when one accepts a bona fide spiritual master. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, clearly states here that this process of knowledge is the actual path. Anything speculated beyond that is nonsense. In this series of verses, the symptoms of knowledge are described. It's quite a long purport. I've only read the first paragraph because I particularly wanted to discuss the point of acharyopasana, which is mentioned in the 8th verse and is discussed in this first paragraph. Bhagavad Gita is a book of knowledge. That should be axiomatically accepted. We find that our devotees distributing Srila Prabhupada's books in India, they find that the most popular book is Bhagavad Gita, as it is, because most Hindus feel that we should have Bhagavad Gita in our home. If we don't, we should have this. How many people read it, I don't know, but that feeling is there that we should have it in our home. But simply to keep it in the home does not give us the benefit of taking the book. We have to read it. Then we can get benefited by the knowledge within. Of course, Bhagavad Gita is so sacred that simply by keeping it in our home, that invites the blessings of the Supreme Lord. That is auspicious to have within the home. Some people say that keeping Mahabharata within the home is inauspicious because that will bring Mahabharata within the home. The Samaveta Yuyutsavaha, that will bring Yuyutsu, those who are eager for fighting, into the home. But that's simply a Hindu legend, we can say. But Bhagavad Gita should be in the home, and being in the home, that is good, but even much better is to be opened every day and read. And many people who do that, they also do it as a kind of ritual. They recite the verses, one chapter every day, or something, Vishnu Sahasranam, or Gopal Sahasranam, Venkatesh Subhrabhatam, something like this. We have recited it, very good. We are very pious and we will get God's blessing. But better than that, better than not having Bhagavad Gita in the home is having Bhagavad Gita in the home. Better than simply keeping it in the home is to recite the verses. Better than reciting the verses is to read the translation and purport to understand what it means. And what's better than that? That's right, following what it says. Yeah, so as Srila Prabhupada said, he once put the question to his disciples, because as I hope you know, Srila Prabhupada very much stressed that his disciples should distribute his books. So one time he asked the devotees, a group of his disciples, then why are we stressing so much on this book distribution? Why? What is the reason? And then Prabhupada himself gave the answer, because we are giving knowledge to human society. Knowledge, the acquisition of knowledge, is the prerogative of human society. It is not possible in animal society to acquire transcendental knowledge. Srila Prabhupada several times gave the example that if we bring a group of dogs into the room and try to preach to them Bhagavad Gita, then how are they wouldn't get any actual benefit from that. Of course, hearing Bhagavad Gita is beneficial, even if there's a dog present, but they can get some what is called agata sukriti, some kind of piety that will help them in a future life. But a human being can take advantage of this knowledge and apply it in his life and get the benediction of understanding this knowledge, which is, just as it's stated here, janma mrityu jara vyadhi dukkha dosha anudarshanam. One should perceive, one item of knowledge is to perceive that birth, death, old age and disease are miserable, and therefore a human being, on the basis of this knowledge, can act in such a way that he can be liberated from birth and death and concomitant old age and disease. Now, here, Acharya Upasana is mentioned. Acharya Van Purusho Veda. One who has an acharya, he knows. Who can know what is to be known? What is to be known is known as Veda, knowledge. What is that knowledge? Lord Krishna states in Bhagavad Gita that Vaidaischa Saveraham Eva Vedyaha. In all the Vedas, the subject, that which is to be known, is Krishna. Vede Ramayane Chaiva Purane Bharate Tatha Adav Ante Chamadhe Cha Hari Sarvatra Giyate. In all the Vedas, Puranas, Ramayana, Mahabharata, all the Vedic literatures, beginning, middle and end, the actual subject matter is Hari, Bhagavan, Krishna. This is the actual subject matter. And one who has accepted an acharya, he can know this. Because acharya means one who teaches. And what does he teach? There are so many things you can learn. How to dance, how to sing, how to make chapatis. There are many things to be learned. But what is the essence of knowledge? That is to understand Krishna, our relationship with Krishna. This is called sambandhagyan. Then abhideya, how to act in that relationship. And prayojan, what is our ultimate necessity of serving the Supreme Lord eternally in His eternal dham, Golok Vrindavan. So this knowledge is to be imparted by an acharya. Without accepting an acharya, no one can understand Krishna. It's not possible. But one has to know who is the actual acharya. There are many gurus. Guruvo bahava santi, shishya vitta paharaka, durlabham sadguru devi, shishya kleshopakaraka. As Lord Shiva told his wife, Devi, that there are many gurus who are very expert at taking away their disciples' money. But rare is the actual guru who takes away the miseries of the disciple. So, actual guru is he who, as Lord Krishna states in Bhagavad Gita, is tattvadarshi, one who has seen the truth, who knows how to guide properly. Otherwise, we are in the andha parampara. Andharya, what is that? Andharya tanda upaniyamanas. The blind following the blind. So we need to go to one who is tattvadarshi. Tattvadarshi means one who sees the truth, who knows the truth. And what is that truth? Vedesya sarveraham eva vedyaha. Could we leave this till later? Now, please, I know you want to be hospitable, but let everyone concentrate on hearing them. That's better. Hospitality later, please. So, who knows Krishna and how to guide us to Krishna is the actual guru. Now, we are all very fortunate here. I suppose you're all followers directly or aspiring to be followers of Srila Prabhupada. Is it? You're all connected with ISKCON. Are there any newcomers here or all who are following the path given by Srila Prabhupada? Following to a greater or lesser extent. Is it? Yes. All consider yourselves, yes. So, we're very fortunate to have come to the shelter of Srila Prabhupada's lotus feet. There are many gurus. There are many people who presume to instruct us. In India, there are so many gurus. And in the Western world also, there are many people who presume to instruct us. In traditional Indian society, if one was feeling some uncertainty or doubt, one would approach guru. Guru, there are various gurus. The guru begins with mother. So, mother, father, or Diksha Guru or Mantra Guru is one who gives spiritual instruction. Divyam Gyanam Yato Dadyat. Diksha is the process by which transcendental knowledge is imparted. So, Diksha Guru is meant for giving spiritual knowledge. Unfortunately, what has happened in India, the role of guru has become, or had become, institutionalized along with the caste system. Just like we find in India, there is this phone can also be, is it required to instruct people how to come here? Or what is that? So this, just like in the caste system, potter's son becomes a potter. A goldsmith, Soni, his son becomes another goldsmith. Tailor's son becomes a tailor. Guru's son becomes a guru. That was the system. Kula Guru. And he has his fixed up clientele. That the guru's disciple's son becomes the disciple of the guru's son. This is called Bindu Parampara or Shukra Parampara. And it is subject to degradation. Because guru is meant for imparting spiritual knowledge. And the disciple offers gifts to the brahmanas and gurus so that they can, without having to go to work or do anything else, they can dedicate their lives to patan, yajan. They can dedicate their lives to studying Shastra, teaching others Shastra, performing pujas and yagyas themselves and for others also. So, and also the brahmanas' functions, pratigraha, they would accept gifts to purify others actually. and they didn't want to collect more than needed, so if they had more, then they would also give that away. So but this is this system is subject to being misused, because it's a very nice life. You don't have to do any work, and people respect you and give you money. Of course, you're supposed to give you all your necessities. Of course, the brahmanas are supposed to be detached, but and to actually know Shastra. But in course of time, with the progress of Kali Yuga, it became very easy for the brahmana caste to simply claim superiority over others on the basis of birth, which is not the main criterion. Generally, a brahmana's son will become a brahmana. But Prabhupada often gave the example that a doctor's son has a better chance to become a doctor than others, but he still has to be trained and competent. Otherwise, someone says, I have to have brain surgery, and they say, well, that'll be $250,000. I don't have that much money. Well, someone says, well, I'll do it for you for only $2,000. You can do brain surgery. Say, well, my father was a brain surgeon. Well, what about you? You know, it's not that difficult. You just cut open someone's head and fiddle around a little bit. I saw my father do it so many times. It's not difficult. Anyone can do it. I mean, my father's a brain surgeon. Why do you doubt? I'm so famous brain surgeon. So he wouldn't, even by saving $248,000, we wouldn't want an amateur to tinker around with our brains. Even if he's the son of a famous brain surgeon. But we are, or it became that we were able to accept or prepared to accept someone who's not properly trained as an imparter of spiritual knowledge. And we tend to accept that that tendency was there. Who is born the son of a Brahmin, specifically those from the guru castes, not every Brahmin's guru, that's the plum job. There's also cooking Brahmins, they have to work hard. And pujari Brahmins, priest Brahmins, astrologers, and all this kind of thing. So the post, it became a post, a social institution that you invite the guru to your home. He comes once a year. He blesses it. You feed him. You touch his feet. You give a donation. And when there's a marriage in the family, he's called, and this is what he does. And he might recite a few shlokas. Eventually, he recite a few shlokas. I remember once in Vishakhapatnam, I think it was, there was one young man, Brahmana, reciting so many shlokas, and I couldn't catch. I said, what was that you were reciting? What does that mean? He said, I don't know. I just, you know, my father taught me to recite. I know what it means. As if it was an absurd question. Why should I know what it means? You ring the bell and blah, 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 pass out the plate. So, just as a religious function, no spiritual benefit. But this kind of kula guru is doesn't have much influence in India today. Any of our Indian friends here were initiated by kula gurus? In the Brahmin caste, still the Upanayanam goes on. Father will do that. But that's also meaningless. In most cases, they do it as a social function. That's all. The Upanayanam means they should go to the... That should be done at a young age. Nowadays, they mostly do along with the marriage to save expenses. When they're already too old. Manu says that if a boy over 12 years old, if he's not given Upanayanam, then he's finished, no hope. then he's just a Shudra. So, but they do at the, they get married at about the age of 99 because they have to, well, not that old, usually about 30, 32, isn't it? Because they have to go to college, get their PhD, then go to America and earn lots of money, and then only they can get married to their wife, who's also half dead at the time. So they do the Upanayanam all at once to save money, because it's expensive. They do it, they club it together with the marriage. And this is all meaningless. It should be done at a young age, and then the boy should go to in the Gurukul to study Veda. They're not studying Veda, they don't know. Rare to find any boys who are trained in Vedas. There are some still. So nowadays, what's going on in India, gurus, then bunch of cheaters. They're all different kinds. There's very popular someone who, he has a long flowing beard and very nice and smiles, and all the well-placed young executives go to him, and he says, "I'm not actually anyone's guru," but still they observe Guru Purnima. He has something which I call the art of going to hell very easily by following him. Nothing there, no substance, nothing at all. And we have so many self-made gurus. So they get some rich disciples, and they're good at telling some stories, and the rich disciples promote them, and they become famous. I was talking just the other day, I was mentioning the name of one famous, very famous guru in India, has a daily TV show. And she left India about 12 years ago, I guess. About that. 10 years ago. She never heard of him. Everyone in India heard of him. Why she hadn't heard of him? Because he's just come up with the TV promotion and all this kind of thing. So, Hinduism, as Srila Prabhupada said, is a hodgepodge of ideas, mostly under the influence of Mayavad. But in Hinduism, in what we can generally call Hinduism, it's difficult to define exactly what Hinduism means. Pandit Nehru said he defined a Hindu as the inhabitants of India who are not Muslim, Sikh, Christian, Parsi, Buddhist, or Jain. But that wouldn't fit nowadays, because there are so many overseas Hindus and converted Hindus, as they say. So within Hinduism, a major, we can say, there are so many different cults. Cults means forms of worship. The worship of the Vaishnava section is also very strong. The worship of, especially as Ram, Krishna, Narayana, and also in these forms of the Lord are worshipped, of Lord Vishnu, are worshipped throughout India, and especially in Andhra Pradesh, Lord Narasimha also. So that's one that we can say. Vaishnavism is one of the main strains or cultures within Hinduism, although it all tends to merge, just like you'll find Vishnu temple, and then side by side is, or in the same building as Shiva temple, and all the gods. So Shaivism is also throughout India. Shakta dharma, worship of Shakti, Durga Devi in her various forms. That's very widespread. And Ganesh worship throughout everyone, and especially in Maharashtra. the Ganesh worship is going on, and so many other gods. So many things in Tulu Nadu, especially the southwest Karnataka, Tulu Nadu, that's southwest Karnataka. The worship of snake, Naga puja is particularly strong there. So in Hindu, there are so many different things, but Vaishnavism is a major part of the Hindu culture. Now we're not talking about ontologically, Vaishnavism means Jaiva Dharma, or the Dharma of the Jiva. Every Jiva is part and parcel of Krishna. Mamai Vangsho Jiva Loke Jiva Bhuta Sanatanaha. But from the cultural or anthropological point of view, Vaishnavism can be considered part of, or a major part of the Hindu religion. And so, many persons who take to Krishna consciousness through ISKCON today, they have a background. Every Hindu knows, at least they've heard of Krishna. Although, actually, one godbrother told me he met a young man in Bombay he told him I'm a Hindu, and he never heard of Krishna, he said. It's a little difficult to believe, but it's not impossible. Or even they may have heard, but they really don't know anything. And if they know anything, it's most likely from Mahabharata TV serial. And that's about all. So, anyway, many people in India have some idea about Krishna to a greater or lesser extent. Most Hindus, even today, would you say that they know that Krishna is the speaker of the Bhagavad Gita? Probably. Probably in Bombay University they don't know, but the kids there. But most, they some idea is there. Something is there. And many are still following quite strongly. Just like in Bombay every day, the people come on the local trains from Karjat and so many outlying places, and they do kirtan on the train because they have a long journey. And still that's going on. You can hear that. And so many, in Maharashtra, the Dindi, and in Bengal there are so many kirtan sampradayas, and Ram Navami is still a major, Janmashtami, these are all still major festivals. So Krishna consciousness is there in Hindu culture, we can say. It's a major part. Most people have some idea, and some more idea. And there are many misconceptions also. Just like in Bengal and Orissa, many people even now love to do kirtan and chant the Hare Krishna mantra and some other concocted mantras also, which have the names of Nitai Gaur and Radhe Shyam, for instance. But they also eat fish, which always struck me as very strange, how people who are supposed to be followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu eat fish. But there you are, it's a common part of the Vaishnav culture. Supposed Vaishnav culture in Bengal and Orissa. And then in Gujarat we have a sampradaya who are quite prominent, who claim to be Vaishnavas, but they say that their founder is actually Krishna himself, Swami Narayan. And they presume that he is Krishna, although there's no Shastric evidence whatsoever. I asked one of them once, what's the Shastric evidence? And he said that the word Sahajanand, Swami Narayan's original name, Sahajanand, well, this word Sahajanand appears in one of the Puranas. It's not very good evidence of him being Bhagavan, that this term appears. In Bangladesh once, I asked one man, who was actually very intelligent materially. He was previously the permanent financial advisor to the government of Pakistan before Pakistan became segregated into Pakistan and Bangladesh. So he's very intelligent materially, but he believed that the, as many other people from that particular area in which he lived, he believed that a certain person by the name of Jagat Bandhu was an incarnation of Krishna. So I asked him, what's the Shastra Praman? And he didn't have any answer. But then sometime later when I saw him, he said, well, the name Jagat Bandhu is in, you'll find in Vishnu Sahasranam. He said, well, you know, there's thousands of boys with the names Gopal in Bangladesh. Does that mean they're all Gopal? They're all Krishna directly? So there are many misconceptions of what is bhakti, what is Vaishnavism. It's even become very materially profitable to sing bhajans. There are so many famous bhajan singers. There's one, Mr. Anoop, who became famous through ISKCON, actually. He has a very good voice, and he sings very nicely, and became very popular. And there's TV serials, like I was saying, TV Mahabharata, Vishnu Purana, and all this kind of thing. But we should know that these commercially produced TV programs and bhajans, we should understand that the main reason they've been produced is not for bhakti, but for commercial gain. That they sound very nice. People are pious, they like to hear something about Krishna. And there's a nice bhajan cassette and it sounds very nice. And oh, that's right. So we can have musical entertainment and the blessings of God at the same time. But actually we don't get the proper blessings of God, which is Shuddha Bhakti, or surrender to Krishna. The Atma Samarpan Bhav, the feeling that I should surrender to Krishna. We can never, even in a million years, get from hearing such a bhajan cassette. Because the person, they may be singing, Hey Bhagawan, Aapke Charan Mein, Main Atma Samarpan Karta Hoon, or something like this. But they're actually thinking, well, I should make a good profit out of this. I'll become famous and rich. So if the motive is not to surrender to Krishna, then however sweet it may sound, we'll never get Krishna. Because Krishna is not manifest through such persons. Or we may go to some temple of some upper sampradaya, like the wrong sampradaya. It's a very beautiful temple. But the wrong, nice building, but wrong idea. And therefore, even though it may seem very nice, and even the people may be very saintly in their behavior, very moral, and very nicely behaved, but if they do not understand who is Krishna through the parampara system, if they are not tattva-darshi, if they have not seen the truth, if they do not understand Bhagavad Gita as it is, if they're not tattva-darshi, then they're also andha, blind. So again, it becomes andha parampara nyaya. And the principle of following a blind parampara. Now, mostly people have millions of misunderstandings about what spiritual life is. And generally they think that sadhu means one who's very nice, smiles a lot, gives blessings, and if he can sing very nicely with a harmonium, that's also very good. Many people were surprised and even many protested to Srila Prabhupada that why are you so nasty and strong? Because Prabhupada would regularly preach or state that most people in the modern age are simply like hogs, dogs, camels and asses. And people would become offended. And Prabhupada would say, I'm simply repeating what is in Shastra. This is Namang Dushkrishino Murha Prapadyante Naradhamaha Maya Pahita Jnana Asuram Bhavamashritaha. Dushkriti, rascals. Prabhupada translated this as rascal. Impious, wrongly behaved persons. There are four categories. Foolish, lowest among men, apparently very educated, MSc, PhD, but fools. They don't know what is the actual knowledge. Their head is filled up with all kinds of information which has no relevance to their actual well-being. And asuram bhavamashrita, those who have taken shelter of the mood of rejecting Krishna. So this is the fact that if we don't know Krishna, if we're not surrendered to Krishna by the parampara system, then our life is completely spoiled and useless. And we're rascals. What does that mean, to surrender to Krishna by the parampara system? That means Anyabhilashita shunyam jnana kamadhyana vritamanukulyena krishnanushiranam bhaktiruttama. To give up all kinds of prospects of thinking how I shall be happy in this material world, and even to give up the idea that I shall be happy by being liberated from this material world, and only to think how to satisfy Krishna in all respects, in all times and all circumstances. This is what the parampara of pure devotees teach. It is quite different to the entertainment parampara, that we shall call Krishna onto a stage, he shall dance for us, and we shall give him a clap and send him away and drink some cocktails with our friends. I went to the temple and there was a nice drama, and I enjoyed it very much, therefore it was very good. We judge everything by how I enjoy. But the acharyas who are tattva-darshi, they're not blind like us. They teach us how to see as we should see with the eyes of knowledge, understanding that I am the eternal servant of Krishna. At present we have contaminated consciousness, by which everything we see, touch, taste, smell, feel, hear and conceive of, we consider it something to be enjoyed by myself. So even when we hear of Krishna, we think, how can I enjoy? I shall enjoy. I like this temple, it's very nice. They have nice bhajans and it sounds very nice. And the kirtan singers are not so good over here. So I'll go to that temple. I like it better. And they have better prasad and they don't ask you for any money. And it's better. Or even I can give money. I can give so much money. So we can build a big temple. I will be famous as a great donor. And I shall enjoy this temple more. So this enjoying mood, we can never understand Krishna. But mostly what goes on in the name of religion is that the very nice and well-behaved and talking very sweetly and flattering, the sadhu flatters the persons and they flatter, oh, you're a very great sadhu, you're a very pious person. And in this way, they flatter each other and everyone feels very nice and everyone goes on completely materialistic and considering themselves great devotees and no one ever surrenders to Krishna. It's all cheating. So this is a short summary of some of the goings-on in Hindu society. And in the Western world, because people in general, they don't have faith in religious leaders, therefore they have invented, instead of going to the priest or the guru for advice, nowadays people go to the psychologist who tells you this or that. And people, or they go to astrologers, crystal ball gazers, New Age, and so on. So this is also misleading, because they're also not tattvadarshi. They don't know what is the purpose of life or how to attain it. I was just looking in some book, I happened to be in someone's house where he was studying for a psychology PhD. So I had a look at some of his books, and they had transcripts of what are they called? Psychotherapeutic sessions. So the woman who was the patient lady was saying that, well, I'm so upset with my husband, and so the psychologist says that, well, why don't you just divorce him? You say, no, well, actually, you know, I quite like him, and I can't, you know, I feel dependent upon him, and I feel obliged to him. They say, but you're not happy, so you should just divorce him. And she didn't want to do that, but at the end of the session, she agreed, okay, I'll divorce him. This is the psychologist. They're trying to help, but they, because they, it's based on the idea how you should be happy, how you should be happy. That never mind your children and husband, social duty, that you should be happy. So if you feel more happy, that you should do whatever is required to be happy. And no reference to Shastra. What a Shastra, they don't have any knowledge of or interest in or faith in Shastra. So like this, so many people giving advice. Now, I'm mentioning all these things. In the beginning, the verse we read, Acharya Upasana. So what's the connection? How we should worship the Acharya? What is the connection between all this? Now, Prabhupada came, and he gave us this transcendental knowledge. He gave us these books. He spoke incessantly. Prabhupada was always speaking the philosophy of the Absolute Truth. There's so many lectures of Prabhupada recorded, so many conversations. Day and night, literally, Prabhupada was distributing tattva gyan. Bhagavat tattva vijnanam muktir sang. What is that? Mukti Sangasya Jaita. I'm really down because I say that verse almost every day. Scientific knowledge of the personality of Godhead, by which one can be delivered from all material attachments and conceptions that bind us in this material world. The Prabhupada is constantly speaking this. In the morning, he would give class. In the day, he would meet people, speak Krishna Katha. In the evening, again, he would speak. And then at night, when everyone was sleeping, Prabhupada would be dictating his books. So practically all the time, Prabhupada was distributing this transcendental knowledge. And very clear. Not, well, maybe, whatever you think, what do you like? Very clear. This is Krishna. This is surrender to Krishna. Our duty is to surrender to Krishna. Very clear. Completely based on Shastra. Completely based on the Parampara system. Because Prabhupada was fully connected to Krishna through the Parampara system. Therefore, he was fully able to deliver Krishna. And we can take
Krishna by fully taking Srila Prabhupada's instructions. It's a very simple principle. Srila Prabhupada is fully in connection with Krishna. Srila Prabhupada has given himself to us as his book. Srila Prabhupada said, if you want to know me, then read my books. And those who are fully connected to Srila Prabhupada by fully following his instructions, they can impart the same instructions to us. And if we fully accept them, then we can fully become Krishna conscious. Very simple principle. However, we have the tendency to be attached to that which is not in our self-interest, or to not be fully surrendered to the amnaivani, the instruction that comes through parampara. So we may think that, well, yeah, Prabhupada is instructing this way, but then I also know from my past background this sadhu is also very good. Or it may be that we think that, well, Prabhupada, he was teaching all these things, but we're in the Western world, and Prabhupada, we may think like this, he didn't really understand it fully, so better we can mix what Prabhupada said with some psychological teachings or something like this, and that will be very good, because if we get psychologically sorted out, then we'll have a clear understanding, and then we can practice Krishna consciousness better. That's a good idea, isn't it? Isn't that a good idea? I have so many anxieties, and depression, and this and that. So let me go to a psychologist, and then psychologists will help me, and then I'll be clear-headed enough to understand everything Prabhupada says. It's a good idea, isn't it? No, it's nonsense. The psychologist can't help us at all. He's also suffering from the same disease of lack of knowledge of Krishna, which is the cause of all our problems. They can't help. They only have their different theories. All this psychology stuff, practically it's just another form of sense gratification, because you lie down and you talk about yourself. But purification, by which we get free from all psychological problems, is affected not by thinking about ourselves, but by hearing and chanting about Krishna. And the more we talk about ourselves, considering how I should be happy, not in relationship to Krishna, the more contaminated we become. So, it's another anartha, or another obstacle on the path of Krishna consciousness, to think that I need to do anything else but follow the process of Krishna consciousness as delivered by Prabhupada through the parampara system. I need to do this, then I can become a better devotee. It's simply a call of Maya, that instead of being surrendered to the, instead of following the system of acharyopasana, then we think, well, I know better than the acharya, or our Western civilization, we know better, or Prabhupada, he was teaching like that, but we also know so many things. Now, actually, it may be true in many ways that those who come from, if they're coming from a Hindu background, they may know so many things about Krishna, and many of the things are very good also. Just like I was saying, in Maharashtra, there's so many people, they like to do kirtan. That's very good. We're not saying it's bad. We're not saying that it's... But if we learn from the bona fide acharya, then we can know what to accept and what not to accept from the Hindu culture. Just like so many people who perform kirtan, they come in the train and they perform kirtan. That's very good. But they also drink tea. Now, drinking tea certainly isn't as serious an anartha or unwanted activity as
eating beef. But it's still an anartha, it's still an obstacle on the path of bhakti. It's a material attachment. And those who are followers of an actual acharya, they cannot be tea drinkers or coffee drinkers or even garlic eaters or onion eaters or even vegetarians without offering their food to Krishna. One who's actually following the acharya, he cannot even go to the store and buy a loaf of bread because they can't be offered to Krishna. I mean, you can theoretically offer it to Krishna, but Krishna, he doesn't like to take. Krishna likes to take that which is cooked and offered with love by his devotees. So to follow the acharya means a high standard of commitment, but that standard of commitment is that which is required to go to Krishna. Therefore, those who desire to go to Krishna will follow that. It's easier to not follow the acharya, but that take it easy means we have to take it easy or not very easy in 8,400,000 species of life. Whereas if we follow the acharya, then we get free from birth and death. Little difficulty requires to be taken. Actually, not very difficult. But because in Kali Yuga we're so poor in any austerity, we think that, oh, I can't eat bread from the store. Too much. And so for a little attachment to a little comfort or easiness, then we place obstacles on the path of our advancement in Krishna consciousness. Or if we think that, yeah, I worship Krishna mostly, but also a little bit Shiva and Durga because we need some material benedictions from them. But that's also an obstacle on the path of Shuddha Bhakti. Anya deva shrinai tomare kahinu bhai e bhakti paramakara Narottam Das. Prabhupada quoted so many times that not the determination not to worship demigods, to take shelter of Krishna only, this is the prime cause of our, or this helps us to enter into pure devotional service. So as we have to understand, Prabhupada has explained very clearly in his books what is the process of pure devotional service. His books means he translated the Shastras. He didn't invent anything. But he gave the books, Bhagavad Gita as it is, Srimad Bhagavatam, everything is explained very clearly. And to elucidate these topics and make it absolutely clear for us, Prabhupada has given us his Bhaktivedanta purports. So everything is very clear and straightforward. What we have to do to become pure devotees of Krishna, which is the only goal of life. Anything else is ephemeral, means here today, gone tomorrow. The only real necessity of every living being is to develop pure love of Krishna. So this acharyopasanam, this is required in our Vaishnav society, in our ISKCON society. We're seeing the tendencies to mix up what Prabhupada has given us with what we have received and are receiving through the broader culture in which we are raised. Now, it may be that some things may be adopted, just like, for instance, last night we were at the program, there were some young men from Sri Vaishnava background. So that culture is very good, very good culture, if one is raised in that. So it's not that one has to reject all of that. That's very nice. That's very good. But at the same time, we can understand that it's not possible to follow all those things in the modern age. Therefore, without rejecting whatever proper things we may have received in there, because unfortunately, most Sri Vaishnavas nowadays are quite off the mark. Many of them are
worshipping different, some Sai Baba or Kalki avatar, really nonsense. Horrible to see, coming in such good families and how they've become distracted. All their great forefathers, how distressed they must be to see their descendants worshipping these colossal cheetahs, demons posing as incarnations of God. So, but if one has received this something good, then take it, yes, don't reject. But add this chanting of Hare Krishna, which is a practical method of reviving our God realization in this age. So even many things are there, what we may call Hindu values or basic human values, whatever is good, that should be adopted. But we should know what to adopt and what not to adopt on the basis of what Prabhupada has given us. We shouldn't think that, as is sometimes mentioned, that, well, Prabhupada said that, but now we have to adopt something else. Because Prabhupada very clearly said that his books are the law books for the next 10,000 years. Prabhupada wanted that, or foresaw that Vaishnava society would be guided by his instructions. So it's not that Prabhupada is just one guru and there are so many gurus and you can take Prabhupada and just mix it up with this or that. But those who have come to Krishna consciousness, and I think that everyone in this room, is their life has been greatly or hopefully changed wholly for the better by taking to Prabhupada's instructions or the movement that Prabhupada started. So we shouldn't think that, well, Prabhupada was just a guru. There are so many gurus. And I'm also a bit of a guru, so I know many things also. And I can also make my own spiritual cocktails. But we should understand that Srila Prabhupada is that very great devotee sent by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to spread his mission all over the world. And that although there may be many sadhus in India, none of them come anywhere near the stature of Srila Prabhupada. None of them are able to help us and guide us and by giving us the clear knowledge of what is the actual path of Krishna consciousness, as Srila Prabhupada has done. So it is essential that all persons taken to Krishna consciousness in the line of Srila Prabhupada understand what he is teaching us. Otherwise, we don't get the actual benefit. This ISKCON movement is not meant simply for becoming a vegetarian, or if we're already vegetarian, stop eating garlic and onions and offer all your food to Krishna and don't drink tea and in this way become more pious. It's not simply a more moral form of Hinduism. And then we chant Hare Krishna together and that's very nice and we feel some peace of mind. But following these principles, that is not the mission of ISKCON, to make everyone into a vegetarian and to help people get peace of mind. And that's the aim, is to give pure love of Krishna, which means certainly moral life is required as a background. There's no beef-eating Vaishnavas or gay and lesbian Vaishnavas. Just like they have Galva. Anyway, it's horrible. Let's not talk about that. They could also have Balva, Beef and Lamb Vaishnava Association. But no, there's no such thing. So basic moral life is there, but that is not the aim in itself of this movement. Prabhupada didn't come to this world to teach everyone be a vegetarian.
Sometimes we see bumper stickers, chant Hare Krishna and be a vegetarian. But if we're actually chanting Hare Krishna, then automatically one is more than a vegetarian. If you're actually chanting Hare Krishna, then we'll be taking only food offered to Krishna, which is not only vegetarian, but that's if it's offered with love and devotion for the satisfaction of Krishna, then we can take Krishna's prasad, remnants. So to understand all these points, what did Srila Prabhupada actually come to give? He came to give the path of pure love of Krishna, which is beyond all mundane conceptions, including Krishna consciousness as conceived of as a cultural expression of Hinduism, mundane religion. We worship Krishna, and Krishna blesses us, and we have a nice family life, and we like to hear about Krishna, and this is Krishna consciousness. All right, that's good. But more than that is to understand that, yes, by the grace of Krishna, we can have peaceful family life with Krishna in the center, but that also is not the goal. We have to understand that we have to leave this body. So actual nice family life is to train all the family members that we are, our eternal relationship is there as servants of Krishna. In an actual Vaishnava family, who is that? One of the disciples of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, one of the leading disciples. He took to Krishna consciousness under the direction of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur very rigidly. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's order was that those householder disciples living in any town where there's a mutt, then in the evening they come to the temple, to the mutt, and engage in full Shravanam Kirtanam. And only when the temple is closed in the evening, then they go home. So that they would have a full program of Krishna consciousness. So this disciple, apart from working all day as a professor, he would come in the evening, engage in all the mart activities of hearing and chanting, hearing the lecture, joining in the kirtan. Then he would do seva, cleaning and all this kind of thing. Well, actually he was mostly doing writing and proofreading. And then, because he had a vow to chant 64 rounds a day, he would chant until very late at night and then come home after midnight. So his family hardly saw him. They weren't very happy. But he thought, I have my duty to my Guru Maharaj. So his family members, they weren't very happy. But eventually, they all became convinced also. And they also took initiation from Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. At which point, he stopped treating his sons as sons. And he also called them Prabhu, because he thought, now they're my godbrothers. He thought that our eternal relationship is at the shelter of our Guru Maharaj's lotus feet. So, I should treat them like that. That's a very advanced outlook, isn't it? So, we may not exactly... Well, especially if the sons are grown up, that may be more possible. If you have young children, you have to train them. But the attitude cultivated within the home, Manasa deho geho jo kichumo apilun tua pade nandakisha, that everything in the home, our mind, our bodies, our homes, everything, is only meant for the service of Krishna. Not that we keep Krishna in one corner and or in one small room in one corner, and then the main room there's a huge TV screen and we sit and watch various things on TV. Even it might be the Vishnu Purana from the TV, but it, sense gratification, it's made as a kind of semi-religious sense gratification, which people like to watch and they become somewhat religious. But again, by watching this for millions of years, no one will ever get the idea that they should surrender to Krishna, because the person who's making it and the people acting in it, they're not at all surrendered to Krishna. So, to be a Vaishnav means to... What does a Vaishnav mean? What do we think? It should be that serving Krishna is the main goal of our life. Should we say that's a Vaishnav? Is that a good definition? Serving Krishna is the main goal of our life? You all accept that? No. That's wrong. Serving Krishna is the only goal of our life. If you say the main goal of our life, that means we have other goals. But that's not ananya bhakti. That's not surrender to Krishna. Now, within serving Krishna, we may have sub-goals. We may pursue various goals. Just like in family life, we have to think, children's education, this, that, and the other. But that should all be, all these endeavors, career, all this kind of thing, should be subordinated to the principle of how we have to serve Krishna. Just like, for instance, there's one example. There are many, many examples. One devotee was asking me that he could get a job in some place, I never heard of it, some island off the coast of South America. And he's by profession a goldsmith, so he could get a job there. And he would earn a lot more money than he's presently earning living in Gujarat. So he asked me, should I go? I said, are there any devotees there? Is there any devotee association? He said, no. I said, don't go, stay. Because what's the use of going there and earning more money and forgetting Krishna by not having any association? So he agreed. He gave up the prospect of worldly success to further his prospects of spiritual success. So this should all, it's not that I said to him, well, you should just give up your job and give up your family. And no, you have your family, look after your family, you have to do something. But even though you could provide more material goods for your family by going to South America or wherever it is, somewhere. But there's no use to doing that if in doing so you run the grave risk of losing your Krishna consciousness. Because a family member, they have to, actual family is that we all see ourselves as part and parcel of Krishna. We have to serve Krishna together. So I particularly request you to understand Krishna consciousness as Srila Prabhupada has given it to us. Because there may be others who are devotees, but mostly, like I say, in modern Hindu culture, there is much confusion, and many people who speak of Krishna, they're mostly everyone who's speaking, I was taught, I don't watch, but I've heard on this, they have this TV channels, Asta, and the other one is Sanskar, is it? Or something like that?
Sanskar,
yeah. So I haven't watched any of the programs, although 24 hours, yeah. I was told that mostly the Swamis, they never even mention the name of God. Most of them don't even talk about religion. They talk about personality development and how to develop self-confidence, and they tell lots of stories and jokes. And this is what the modern Hindu guru is. They may throw in a few stories about Krishna, and they'll mix it up with a story about Einstein as if it's all the same kind of thing, and dish it all out with a little singing. And people want to be cheated. It's laghu, which means light, but guru means heavy. That knowledge is heavy, we don't like to hear. Something light, entertaining. But guru means heavy. Follow this. So disciple also has to be heavy. Guru is heavy and disciple has to be heavy enough to take the weight of Guru's instructions. We want a light, it's an oxymoron, means a contradictory term. We want a Guru who is light, but that Guru is not Guru, because Guru means heavy. So if we are light, that means we are insincere, whimsical, then we'll want something that's very, oh yes, very nice, very good, I like it. We judge everything how I like it. But Guru trains us how to act and think in such a way that everything we do, Krishna will like it. Prabhupada has delineated this in his books. Clearly, straightforwardly, in all details, from every conceivable angle of vision. So, I request you to take this very seriously. Read Prabhupada's books. That was a must when we all joined this school. It is expected every devotee has to read Prabhupada's books. But unfortunately, I'm finding sometimes devotees, they've been initiated for 20 years and they still haven't read the Srimad Bhagavatam. So something's wrong there. Because we're initiated for the sake of receiving transcendental knowledge in the parampara, which is principally given through Prabhupada's books. So if we're not reading them, then why are we getting initiated? It's not just promising, I will not eat meat and not drink wine, but all that is to prepare us for receiving this transcendental knowledge. And if we're not receiving knowledge from Prabhupada and through the parampara, then that means we're receiving knowledge from other sources, because all the time we're receiving information through the senses. So that means we're going to be misled. If we don't accept the correct guidance, then we're going to be misled and we'll have so many different ideas. And even within Prabhupada's movement, we find that someone's teaching something about, based on some psychology or something like this, or family, what is this? Seminars on family life with very little reference to Shastra, and mostly based on men are from Mars and women are from Venus, which is all useless actually, because it's not based on Shastra. It's based on the idea of personal relationships. But if we simply follow Dharma, what is described in Shastra, then automatically all these things come without all the different speculation. The problem with all these books like Men Are From Mars and stupid books like this, it's all based on the idea that the man should provide sense gratification for the wife and the wife should provide sense gratification for the husband, and you have to balance that. This is what they call love, and that's why there are so many divorces, because marriage is entered into for sense gratification, whereas in Vedic culture it is entered into as, or in any human culture, it's entered into as a religious process for purification. That man and wife enter into married life for the sake of helping each other. That's why we say, sahadharmini. What is the meaning of that? It means who... together, the wife together with the husband practices dharma. Not saha bhogini. Not meant for that. Saha bhoga vilasini. No, it's not meant for that. Saha dharmini. So please read Prabhupada's books, listen to his lectures, and understand his position. He's not just another guru. There are so many gurus. Sanskar Channel is 24-hour gurus. All laghu. Halka. Nothing. They have nothing of any value to give. They're all simply self-promoting. Just see the difference between Prabhupada. And so many gurus came to the West and attempted to make themselves famous, isn't it? But Prabhupada made Krishna famous all over the world. That is the difference. Prabhupada was promoting Krishna. He was never promoting himself.
Okay.
As a child growing up in England, I'd never heard of Krishna because no one in the Western countries, no one knew. Prabhupada made Hare Krishna famous. Now everyone knows. At least they know, they've heard. What is that? So we should appreciate that Prabhupada is a pure devotee. He had no personal motive. Even for Prabhupada, even his own, as a pure devotee, he could have remained in Vrindavan. He would have been very happy. But he came out of Vrindavan to give Vrindavan to us, to the whole world. And even that Hindu culture actually at that time was going down more and more. I remember traveling as a young brahmachari in India in the 1970s. And mostly these students were very disrespectful because they thought, what is all this? We're not interested. We want science. Nowadays, we can say there's a Hindu revival. But that has come because the Hindus they've gained faith in their own culture, seeing how seriously the followers of Srila Prabhupada are practicing Krishna Bhakti. Then they gain faith that these people are so serious. They're taking it up so seriously. So we're all here by Prabhupada's mercy, actually. Is it or is it not? So we should take that mercy. Prabhupada has given it. He worked so hard, even after all day preaching. At night he would go on preaching, giving these books. So let us take the mercy of Prabhupada, which he's left behind in the form of these books, and read them again and again, and follow them. That is my request to you and to all the members of our Krishna Conscious Movement. Let us stick very focusedly on the principle of pure devotional service. That is the essence, that is the sweet nectar, that is the actual nectar for which we are always anxious. And this kind of watered down little bit of Krishna, little bit of something else, that can never satisfy ourselves. Never, certainly, cannot satisfy Krishna. And if Krishna is not satisfied, then we ourselves will not be satisfied. So if we actually want our own self-interest, then we must surrender to Krishna. And Prabhupada has given us that process so easily, actually. There's nothing very difficult to follow. We just have to be a little strict, a little serious. Take it very seriously, and we can get the full mercy of Srila Prabhupada, become pure devotees, and go to that place from whence he has come to take us back to mainly Golok Vrindavan, the land of pure devotional service to Krishna. Hare Krishna. So any question, comment, or protest, please say it now. And maybe protest sometimes. If you have some objection, we're also willing to consider that. Yeah.
Maharaj, you mentioned Prabhupada, he came to give Krishna consciousness as a cultural movement, as a cultural revolution. Can you speak a little more? What does cultural mean?
Srila Prabhupada said that Krishna consciousness is not an ordinary religion. It is a spiritual, cultural, and philosophical movement for the re-spiritualization of the entire human society. Culture encompasses all activities of human society and the individuals within it. Not only the activities, but culture is based on a mindset or a philosophical understanding, just like the modern Western culture is based on it's not a rigidly defined philosophy, but it's based on the idea that we should all enjoy ourselves as much as possible. So Western culture is the culture for going to hell. And the Vedic culture is based on the understanding that death is not the end. That we get what we do in this life makes our future. And the ultimate focus of Vedic culture is pure Krishna consciousness, to act in such a way that we will go to Krishna. So Prabhupada was teaching the Vedic culture, specifically the Vaishnav culture of surrender to Krishna. So that's culture encompasses how we dress, what we eat, how we spend our day, everything. So it's a big topic. I'm writing a book about that, and I have one book, introductory book about that, Glimpses of Traditional Indian Life, which gives some idea of the culture that Prabhupada wanted to introduce us to. Anything else?
I am writing a new book on Bhaktisiddhanta Prabhupada. Can you give some inspiration which you found if we don't know what is like?
What you don't know about him.
What is the question,
Maharaj? About Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Well, I told you something in the class. I was referring to Professor Sanyal Narayan Das Adhikari, who disciple of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. In essence, he himself said that the essence of all his teachings was Drigdrishya Vichara, to understand who is the seer and who is the seen. Actually, I gave a seminar in Mayapur last year, so I have that on CD. So you can take the CDs. It's in one of them. Then you'll get about 8 hours of Bhaktisiddhanta Vani.
Well, if you have a few minutes, since you talked about so much about Vaishnavas, maybe a little bit more glimpse about how Bhaktisiddhanta Prabhupada had this wonderful discussion about Brahmanas and Vaishnavas.
Brahmanas and Vaishnavas. Yes, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur wrote a book on this topic. Brahmana o Vaishnava Vishaya. I can't remember the full name. Taratamya, something like this. Yeah, that was a major point of contention in Hindu society at the time. Not so much nowadays. To a large extent, it's become accepted in Hindu society that even Westerners can be and are Brahmanas, because the Brahmanas, to a large extent, have left their traditional duties as spiritual teachers. So the vacuum has been filled by others, and that's to a large extent accepted now, which Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur fought to establish, that a real Brahmana is one by who's actually acts like that and who is absorbed in spiritual consciousness. So to a large extent, that fight is over. He had to fight at the time against the Brahmana orthodoxy, who did not want to give up their inherited monopoly over religion. So Hare Krishna.
Yudhishthira Bhaktisiddhanta Prabhupada, who took the initiative of giving Diksha, Brahman Diksha, based on the qualities, he was the main...
He established, or he fought to establish, himself and others also, but himself in the vanguard, established that anyone or a Vaishnav must be accepted as a Brahmana by his qualities. He wasn't the first to do this, but he made it in that age. He was the one who was making a very strong case for this, for which he came up against much opposition, attempts to kill him. Being an acharya isn't such an easy thing. It's not a matter of just going around and getting fed and giving blessings. But actual acharya has to speak the truth. Even others want to kill him for doing so. We see that also. Ramanujacharya, same thing. They wanted to kill him. Not Muslims, Hindus. The Shaiva king wanted to kill him, and they caught his cousin. They didn't kill him, they took his eyes out to punish him for not accepting Shiva as supreme. And Kuresh, he said, thank you very much. Now I